Hey, everybody, I'm Chris Mannix from Yahoo Sports, and welcome to the Yahoo Sports Boxing Podcast, where I check in with some of the top fighters, trainers, and decision makers in the world of boxing. My guest this week is Bernard Hopkins, the future Hall of Famer, who next week will end a nearly three-decade boxing career when he takes on Joe Smith. I asked Hopkins what he thinks was the most meaningful fight of his career.
The first thing that started the snowball effect to become a big ball. It's the Trinidad fight.
And why we should believe that this will be his final fight.
I sign off on it. I put it in writing. This will be my final one. Win, lose, or draw.
That and more next on the Yahoo Sports Boxing Podcast. So, Bernard Hopkins, I'm going to tell you about some things that were... some things about 1988, when your career first began. Movie tickets, $3.50.
What are they now, 15?
Oh, they're like 15 bucks. You can't go to a movie for anything less than that. Usually more, some places. Gallon of milk, $1.89. It's way higher now. Where else we got here? A lot of the cost of a home, $90,000. Can't get that anymore.
Who was the president? Or who was going out?
Well, it was Reagan.
Reagan leaving.
And then his vice president, George Bush, coming in.
Senior. Then junior.
Then Clinton, then junior. So you've survived a lot of, you've been fighting during a lot of administrations.
About four or five, I think.
Yeah, yeah. What do you, that first fight, Clinton Mitchell, when you think back about it, Atlantic City, who was Bernard Hopkins back then?
A young man finding his way in the boxing business that wasn't open for just anybody walking in and being stamped as a superstar coming from the background that I came from. In 1998, fighting Clinton Mitchell, who was a high-decorated amateur fighter from New York City, who was undefeated, and I wasn't. I was 0-0.
Technically undefeated.
Yes. So that Bernard Hopkins was an opponent, easy to say, by record. And by not being anybody of interest of the next bright star, right?
Mm-hmm.
An opponent. And I made opponent into what I am now. If you look by, when I say opponent, by the record of a Clinton Mitchell compared to when I fought, and to lose that fight and be off for what, a year and a half to two, and, you know, work my way through even when I start getting a little bit of attention, but not the respect, which is different.
Mm-hmm.
Then the wheels of achievements, and then, you know, making those things come to fruition is why I'm here now.
How much money did you make for that Clinton Mitchell fight?
$100.
Couple of hundred, okay. Mm-hmm. And after
you got to pay the corner man and all that, right. $600-$700. So I'll say I took home about maybe $250, $300.
$250. What'd you do with that money?
Oh, I spent it.
Immediately?
Everything, yeah. I had no control. It was just part of... I mean, you get your sneaks, you buy a hat, a shirt, whatever, and that money is within a couple of days, you know, you either working or you're trying to find another fight. You got to remember, I'm in a halfway house. I'm not out 100%. I'm fresh off of being incarcerated since 83. So I had... restitution every week, or every month, excuse me, at least $50 a month restitution. I think I had maybe a $300-$400 restitution. And that was a lot to pay off when you're not making any money. So, yeah, I mean, these things was little factors that I still remember today. It doesn't haunt me. It just remind me where I came from.
You, as most people who know your story, you basically learned boxing in prison.
No.
You fought in prison, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
right. But I learned boxing around the corner from where we lived in Germantown on Upsall Street in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
The guy named was Jez Jarrett. He ran a boxing, boys boxing name and title, Together Brothers. He was a city worker of a gang patrol. Philadelphia had a lot of gang problems. And he was a Chrysler gang patrol intervention, which was a program that the city had under their budget to go around every corner in the city of Philadelphia, southwest to northwest Philly, and the gang patrol officers didn't have guns, but they had radios and they had the city cars, and they would come to corners and they would stop crowded corners and gangs and fight, and they'll know all the movers and shakers of the gangs. And they used to run us off the corner, even though I wasn't part of a gang, honestly. But if you was out there in the streets, they knew, and this particular guy, Mr. Jazz Jarrett, knew. Mr. Jazz, we call him J-A-Z-Z, knew the movers and shakers in the neighborhood. He knew the old heads, and he also knew the young guys. And he knew me. And he knew my father and mother from North Philly, who migrated to Germantown in the late 70s, as he did in his family. That is Mr. Robert Jazz Jarrett. Mm-hmm. And so in that basement, by Jazz Jarrett knowing my mother and father and their brothers, mother and father, Artie McLeod, who's my mother's brother, if he was, you know, God rest his soul, and my father, Juju Hopkins, his name was Juju as his boxing name, and also Johnny Lightning Clyde, they all late 50s, early 60s, and then it's me as that, what, I don't know, third generation. You have the DNA on both ends, I did, and you have Mr. Jazz Jarrett, who grew up with my parents, or at least in the same North Philly area before they migrated to Germantown in the 70s to get away from North Philly. And that is where my talents was discovered and start to be molded, in that basement on Upsall Street, and then fighting for AAU trophies, this, that. I became not only in elementary school, which is Charles W. Henry, which is at Green and Carpenter Lane to today, with my plaque on the wall and the playground for the kindergarten kids, could go to kindergarten, eighth grade, that I've donated 15 years ago under my mother's Make-A-Way Foundation, Shirley Hopkins. And from that, I learned the craft of the sweet science. From winning at the 26th and Master Recreation Center, AEUs in Pennsylvania, here, there, age of young, caught up, tired of trophies, got boring, and the talent was still there. The respect and intimidation was still there because I became popular in the neighborhood. I became popular in school amongst other students. So either two ways those things can mature in a positive way or a negative way. I took the negative first. Mm-hmm. And that became addictive. That became identity. That makes sense to you.
Yep.
It gave me an identity amongst the rest of some wolves. And then the other process.
If you didn't get locked up, where are you today? Would you have followed the same path, do you think, in the boxing world?
If I would remain on the streets?
If you had stayed on the streets and didn't go to prison?
The chances, probably no, because it would have took something for me to say, let me go back. And I don't think 90% would have been not to go back because of the work you have to put in to become or attempt to become what I've became, or even successful in I hate to say minor way or any way. Jail played a part, but it didn't play the ultimate decision of who I am today. Because what I experienced personally in jail, it was the opposite of you not never coming back. It was, I can't wait to get back. Mm-hmm. As weird as that might seem, jail ain't crapped up like a TV show or reality show. I'm not saying it's a walk in the park. I'm not saying, which I've never been in the feds where you're playing golf and eating steak. But what I'm saying is that the comfortability that is geared for you not to have a conscience not to come back is there big time more than I'm never coming back. Mm-hmm. The decision has to be made by that individual, John, and that individual alone. That's being a productive citizen, law abiding, 9 to 5, pay your taxes, you know. Not exciting, but I'm not going to say it's boring either, but I wanted to do something and be something bigger than just being good in society.
You have fans that span different decades. You have fans that are that remember your fight against Trinidad. You have fans remember your fight against Jones and Tarver. You have fans remember your fight against De La Hoya, even more recent fights that you've won that have been significant. When you look back at your career, the most memorable, meaningful, impactful win for you was what?
To think about it is a challenging, and that's a good thing.
A lot of big wins. A lot of big moments.
Every moment had its... You know, the thing about that question, and normally I got an answer for everything.
Yes, you do.
But that question have me stuck for a minute, and it probably won't get answered because I'm not going to reach and try to find something just to fill in that dot. That is a good thing. And a thing with credibility to be able to say there's so many things to narrow down to one particular thing. You can mention Trinidad. You can mention De La Hoya fight. You went in all 5 belts, which no fighter ever done yet, I don't believe. You can mention the 20 defenses. You can mention become the oldest athlete. They might argue. Some might say, no, just boxing. You can. Then I broke my own record. Then it started becoming a little silly. I had to go do something else. I mean, there's a list of things that I am proud to say that is attached to my name that I cannot just say one particular thing. But I can say what was the first thing that started the snowball effect to become a big, big ball. Mm-hmm. It's the Trinidad fight.
Yeah.
Now, is that the defining moment? No, because there was so much stuff that I'd done after that and so many odds that I beat after that and so many odds makers that I've proven wrong. Historic, knowledgeable people that was man and woman enough to say, you know, I'm wrong about this one, I must say. You didn't have to stare down the ring at us for me to tell you in front of your face after the Kelly Pavlik fight. But, you know.
I was there for that.
That's the key, but.
Sitting next to Tim Smith there, watching you stare across the ring.
I mean, you know, one thing I could say about Tim Smith, and Tim Smith will tell you this, he probably already told you already. Tim Smith said he would never drink the media Kool-Aid again when he jumped on the bandwagon of everybody else's opinion and went along with everyone else. And he said, man, I'll never go against you again, even for Sergey fight. Even for, and Tim Smith understood something. He said, look, you can be wrong. But he said, this one, he was so wrong, John. When you so wrong, like, wait a minute, like, why didn't you see that? What's the 1% out of 100 where it might not go the way everybody else thinking and going? If you don't take a time to figure that out or take the time to say, what is 1% out of 100 where Bernard can win? That might be that 1% where you might not go with everybody else. You might say, hey, wait a minute. Bernard got better foot movement. Bernard got better reflexes. So Tim Smith and I, you know, he's still professional. We can agree, disagree, which we still do. But Tim Smith would tell you right now that he would never bet against Bernard Hopkins again.
You were here because you're fighting your final fight next weekend against Joe Smith.
December 17th on HBO.
December 17th, yes, on HBO. But HBO threw you a farewell 12 years ago. HBO said goodbye to you 12 years ago.
No, I said goodbye
to... You said goodbye.
To HBO.
You said goodbye, and then now we're here, 12 years later,
yeah, basically. But HBO didn't tell you. I said, psych.
Fingers crossed. But what are we still doing here? What has driven you over these last 12 years? when you clearly have saved your money. You clearly are not one of those fighters or athletes.
To competition, to be in competition. Sorry to cut you off. Go ahead, finish.
No, I mean, you are not one of those athletes that is going to retire.
I'm doing fine off my U.S. Treasury bonds.
U.S. Treasury bonds. I don't know too many athletes that say that.
Yeah. If you try to buy them down, it's 1.5%, basically nothing. When I got in over 15 years ago, it was 3.5. So I'm locked in when I got them 15 plus years ago. So I remind you, I'm not getting bonds, right? Less for my kids because they're young. Mm-hmm. Like my daughter, they you know, they're 5 years old, they're going to grow, right? So yep. I will get a 1.5% bond because there's no risk and the government is going to be here for a long time,
yep.
right? We live in that type of country, not in Peru or anywhere else. That's safe on their side because they'll grow with the money. But when I got in, to be fairness, even though it's not 9%, it's 3.5%. And, you know, it was laughing at me then, like, Bernard, listen, you put 20-something million up. I mean, I had the Oscar fight. I had a lot of millions, a couple of million-dollar fights. I had this, I had that in between a big Oscar fight. That took me over the top. You pay your expenses. Expenses low, you pay your taxes. Expenses low, profits high, you pay your taxes. Everything else is basically investment
right.
for long term. And I always believe in long term. I'm very conservative. I'm very conservative, and I always have the mentality and the patience to buy or to purchase with value compared to what's not value. I don't want to own a car. I want to lease a car.
Cars depreciate.
I try to deal with appreciation than depreciation.
Right.
And that's in not only business thinking, but I look for long-term relationships. If you look around at people that's been with me, it's been around a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You take Bernard Hopkins and De La Hoya, Oscar De La Hoya's company together, and me and Oscar as partners. I don't think he was in the boxing business. As a matter of fact, I know he wasn't at the time. They literally laughed at us. Oscar, they laughed at. And they said, and Oscar would tell you this, and you heard it before. Y'all making a bad decision. Y'all going to be suing each other or something ain't going to happen. I'm telling you. These respectful people. 13-plus years later, without getting into detail, because this is going back for old stuff, I don't brag about being still here. I'll tell you is that loyalty is not spoken about, it's proven.
Mm-hmm.
Loyalty is not spoken about, it's proven. And time will prove most, if not everything, in time. Give it some time.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you hear to witness it is one thing, but time will bring it out from the dark.
Okay, so what pushed you past 40, though? I mean, you had made the promise to your mother, right?
What pushed me past 40, answer that first question?
Yeah.
Is that numbers matters in this country, and I want to prove that it doesn't matter to me.
But you could do that in two fights or three fights. You could prove, okay, I'm still fighting in my 40s. Even that, Bernard, is largely unparalleled. You've got a few football players that did it as quarterbacks, Warren Moon types that have done that. You don't see athletes competing at high levels, especially not in combat sports like boxing. Where does the motivation come from when you are financially secure, when you do have a piece of a company there in Golden Boy Promotions?
And now in HBO.
Right, and now involved with HBO, of course.
To be able to compete differently when I used to compete with a mentality of that I need the big and I want the big purses because I deserve it. I think it's more of the character of the person who not going in the ring for free, going in the ring even now where more people are making a lifetime, but understanding is more of the competition of not only being the final one, but before the final one, to be able to say that I can do something that others would never try, or tried and failed. It's part of my biggest challenge is to push the envelope with the risk of getting bit in the behind. And to me, taking the risk of this, in spite of what I've accomplished in boxing, there's been a risk from day one. Obviously, it's a bigger risk as time goes on. But that's the way I am, and that's me. One thing I'm not in denial of, as this is the final one, everything, including life, has to come to a close. And so this is the way that I felt out of many fights I could have left, being victorious, non-victorious, controversy, non-controversy. You only know, from my perspective, when it's time. And when it's time is now. And the perfect time now that I couldn't orchestrate this last year, I didn't give you a year or 6 months notice that this was going to be the time, but I never stopped thinking that it wasn't going to be a time where I'd be able to have my final one. And that's why I stayed my ass in the gym. And that's why I stayed myself in condition enough where to get back in condition of training condition, not walking around on HBO in my suits looking great, mm-hmm. right? Right? That's one set of marketing. But staying ready at all times made me go into an easy transition of camp and an easy transition of a teacher, not a trainer, to be able to fill one hat to take the task that's coming December 17th. Just something that I feel that I deserve to myself to go out on my own terms, win, lose, or draw.
Right.
Some of us has to have that fulfilled, but everybody don't have the opportunity or given opportunity because you have to have a mark in this business to be able to say he deserved to go out like a Kobe Bryant. He deserved to go out respectfully the way he came in, fighting. Now, the results of those things is up to him, mm-hmm. right? Maybe some judges. At the end of the day, I think that's where the respect from HBO and from the boxing world who agree, even the ones that disagree, don't disagree that everything I have, I earned. I'm one of the fighters that I wasn't given anything.
You fought most of the peers of your time. When you look back at the nearly 30 years of opponents, is there one you wish you had? Is there a fight you didn't get in your career that you wish you did?
James Toney.
That's it?
Yep.
Around what time? What was the...
Middleweight.
Middleweight. And why didn't that happen?
Who knows?
Money, probably.
No, James Toney probably ate his food. Probably couldn't make 160, but that was the fight. That was a fight that I would like to have, and that wouldn't have been an easy fight. But James Toney in the middle division had one of the best defense
yeah.
from the role. You know, to me, you know, between him and Floyd Mayweather, but James Toney first because I witnessed him do it first. Had the best from the waist up movement of slipping punches. And, you know, these things are something that I was eager to take on a guy who had a good defense like myself and who had a good counter like myself. Work ethics may be debatable, but I knew that that would be a challenge fighting James Toney. His demeanor, his skills, my skills, his counter punching, that's how he operates. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is you know, you remember the fight with him and Prince Charles Williams?
Yeah.
That fight, I will, and you know, we were set to fight. We made the front cover of Ring Magazine, mm-hmm. and you know, it didn't happen. So that was really, really not a hard question, but it was easy to answer because that's the fight that I always tell people I wish I had. James Toney at his best at 160, John, because he was a badass. He was a badass. Mike McCollum fight. Remember those two fights?
Yep.
Badass.
Yep.
And great I tell James Toney that I haven't seen him in years, but in L.A. when I was going out there, I tell them all the time, man, you know how to kick your ass. Oh, they got a cigar. Mm. And we're and trust me, you could put a TV camera, both of us. It was just going crazy. Funny. But yeah, that was a fight that I wish I can, had accomplished.
Your career is in some ways intertwined with Roy Jones. You had the early Roy Jones fight. You lost. You had a later one, and you won convincingly. Your two careers later on, you're still fighting, but a lot of people look at you and say Bernard Hopkins would be competitive with a lot of guys in his weight class. Maybe you're not able to beat a Sergey Kovalev at this point in time, but you know, 90% of the 175s you would be in there with and be competitive with. Roy's on the other hand, he's still fighting. People are wondering why he's still fighting. What do you think the difference is between you and Roy Jones?
John David Jackson said to me a long time ago, and he's here to remind everybody, if you want to, you know, styles. Is his style that he was successful with compared to the style, which I believe I'm an all-around fighter, a fighter that's well-rounded, all-around fighter, compared to a fighter that has super talent with speed, power, unorthodox boxing skills. When those things leave, those three major things leave, that's a big weapons of arson that he don't have that leaves him a sitting duck. Now you take me, and I'm not being modest to the point or disrespectful to my own ability, but you take myself who has talent in 50% of all categories of making a perfect pound-for-pound fighter or a fighter that's complete, that's the word, then normally that fighter will last longer than a fighter who has two or three freaky talent that desert him later. When Roy lost his speed, he lost his power, his speed. So when you lose your speed, you lose your power, and your chin wasn't weak, but it wasn't the greatest because you never really got tapped on enough to even mentally and physically be prepared for your body even to take it. And those things can be a factor in a recipe that puts you in really, really harm's way. His style was great when you have those attributes to be able to do it. But when time takes away the speed, and speed is power, it's just a domino effect on a fighter that has super talent in three categories that can get you so far in your career. But give me the guy to have 10 talents in all categories would get you longer.
John, let me ask you, if you could move that over there, Bernard, to ask him one question. You were in the corner opposite Bernard Hopkins in his last fight against your fighter, Sergey Kovalev, there. What did you see there, and what made you interested in getting on board for this, his final fight?
Well, in Sergey Kovalev, you have a special fighter who's extremely strong, and he has a great jab. Well, other than Sergey, there's really no one in 175 that can deal with Bernard. Bernard has so much savvy. His ring generalship is so great. It's like he just alluded to. You know, his way of coming up, and I explained to him was, you know, yours was on the job training. You learned through blood, sweat, and tears. Now, you're good as an amateur, but as a pro, you progressed even more because you had to, because the gyms in Philly are tough. Mm. And, you know, you can just walk and think you're gonna do something, you're gonna get your butt whooped and your feelings hurt. So it made Bernard tough. So I other than Sergey, and I told everybody, at 175, you have to run through Bernard Hopkins. And that's not an easy road to run through because he's definitely very smart and very intelligent fighter. And, you know, looking at his opponent, Joe Smith, he's a baby. He's got 22 wins, 18 knockouts. But who has he fought? His 22 fights, victories, couldn't measure up to let's say Bernard's first 15 fights, because I can guarantee you this, Bernard's first 15 opponents could outmatch 66 if Joe had opponents in front of him. It's day and night. So to answer your question, you know, other than Sergey, and if it was a younger Bernard that fought Sergey, it'd have been a different story.
How does that conversation go with you two? How does it, because Bernard was trained by Nazim Richardson for a very long time. How does it, who calls who in that one? Does Bernard call you? And what's that conversation like?
Well, we met. We meet each other vice. We have mutual respect for one another. So it just came up. And I always tell Bernard, I love to work with Bernard. The first, you know, Bernard and I worked for 6 fights. And to me, the Tarver fight and the Pavlik fight, to me, were my greatest accomplishments. Because he did everything that I asked him to do to a T. Mm-hmm. And especially Tarver, you know, I worked on one specific punch and he threw it a right hand counter and he dropped Tarver. And Pavlik, he just destroyed Pavlik. Yep. And everyone said Pavlik was this great kid. I said, Bernard, you've got more than he's learned. And he went out there and they couldn't believe that this, I think he's about 44 at the time.
Yeah.
He just destroyed this kid. So, you know, it's the mutual respect that we have for one another. I mean, when I was champion, he was my chief sparring partner. Mm-hmm. And I said back then, I said, man, this cat is, I said, this guy, because back then he was reckless. He was tough. But the beauty of Bernard was after we had sparring sessions, he would say, John, what am I doing wrong? Or we would talk about it.
He had a jab that, see, he fucking snapped you like a bitch. And I'm sitting there like, God, this fucking jab at Champ's gym. I couldn't hit me with this jab all the time.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't like a boom. It was like this low. Pap, you bitch. Pap. It's slapped the shit out of me, man.
I know
you can curse on this thing.
You can absolutely curse on this thing. No worries about that. I know you got to go, but one question I wanted to ask you is because knowing you over the last 10 years or so, and knowing that just because this is your last fight, you're not going to stop going to the gym. You're not going to.
You know I'm not.
You're not at all. And Bernard, it wouldn't,
get sick.
It's not, wouldn't surprise me in the 6 months after this fight to hear
Why
some.
6 months? What about Monday?
All right. Monday after this
Six
fight, to hear some 175 title holders, 25 years old, mention your name, and somebody will ask you about it, and you'll say, well, I'm still here. I'm still doing it. So is it fair to question whether this really is the last one?
Yes, it is, because not only that, you can talk to Oscar. You can talk to – you got their number. They answer the phone when you call. I sign off on it. I put it in writing.
What does that mean?
That means that I won't – this will be my final – one, win, lose, or draw. I'm done. That's why John here, I promise he would be part of my final one because he's part of my legacy for major big, these three, the 6 big fights that I've had, 3 of them really big. This is the final one. And, you know, it's so much, I mean, without having anybody think that I'm distracted mm-hmm. and never was focused, having the relationship with Golden Boy and giving other fighters an opportunity to come close or do what I've done or even more than I've done in time, whether it's possible or not. Also, having HBO, a powerful company, embrace me, like my ideas, like the way I break down and the way I have articulated things and come up with these imaginary things that make sense and get people to talk about on camera called The Perfect Execution or The Fight Game. I mean, there's so much family. There's so outside of boxing business. There's so many things that are going right for me right now. Only thing that I have to do is maintain, obviously, listen to my teacher, maintain, stay healthy, and take nothing for granted in or out of the ring. This is the discipline that's been talked about over and over in years and years too. Sometimes I might get tiresome hearing it from, you know, people. And I understand that to a way, might not agree, but I understand. But it's part of who I am. It's part of me being real about what you said about me 5, 10 years ago. It's the same thing as you're saying in 2016. Bernard's fighting a tough Irish kid from Long Island who's a blue-collar construction union guy. He's not coming to lay down. Why is he fighting anymore? Why is he fighting him? Mm-hmm. Don't you know Bernard Hopkins? What did you expect? A cream puff? Somebody? That's not him. So I think that the way I came in or the way I've been operating is the way I want to leave out. with a challenge. With a challenge. Not with a fight of charity of we just doing it because it's Bernard Hopkins.
Well, Bernard, it's been great to cover your career throughout, even though you think I'm 12 and don't actually...
Always. No, you're 13
don't
now.
Actually know that I've been covering you for about 12 years.
At least.
Not just 12 years old. But good
at
luck.
At least.
Good luck on the 17th, and I'm sure we'll all be talking to you for years to come in your promotional role as well.
Yes, no problem, and good talking.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Bernard Hopkins for joining the show. A reminder, you can download this podcast and other archive podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a rating, leave a comment. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.